One of the most popular new activities in travel anywhere these days is food tours. When I do my research in Europe, I generally schedule a regular guide for my daytime activities and a food guide for the evening. And from Seattle to Havana to Reykjavik to Athens, some of my favorite cultural and travel experiences have been on food tours. Tony Mazzaglia runs food tours in Florence, and I thought I'd invite her onto our show to take us on a little walk through Florence and nibble our way from start to finish. Ciao, Tony.
Ciao, Rick.
Nice of you to join us. Hey, tell us how a North Carolina girl 25 years ago ended up in Florence running food tours.
Well, my first experience or my first journey to Italy was in 1997 with your book in hand. I didn't speak a word of Italian. And I was actually just going to stay in Italy briefly and have a study abroad in Spain. And when I got to Italy, I fell in love with the culture and the food and actually found family in Sicily I didn't know existed. And so by the time I got to Spain for my study abroad, I decided I preferred to be in Italy where nobody expects you to dance on a regular basis. And I was allergic to shellfish, so I just figured I was better off in Italy than Spain. I just fell in love with Italy.
And now you're running a food tour business called Taste Florence. And just talk about a little bit the general scene for food business. There's a lot of food tour companies.
Oh, yeah.
You can find food guides. I look for that. I booked you to be my guide, and we had a wonderful evening together just last year when I was in Florence researching.
It was fun.
That was really fun. I learned so much. I just think it's a great dimension of culture anywhere in our travels, as I mentioned. Without specifically talking about your company, just in general, what is the variety of companies that are available and what are the options that travelers have to be able to connect with a local food expert in their travels?
Oh, there are absolutely dozens of food tours running now in Florence. When I started almost 16 years ago, there weren't that many. I would say maybe a few in the major cities. And now you have almost too much of a choice. So you do want to do your research and make sure you have a reputable guide and company and, read through the reviews, make sure they didn't start just a few weeks ago, that they've been doing it for a while. Mm-hmm. You can go anything from a morning food tour, which is more of my specialty, or an evening food tour, cocktail tours, cooking classes. Of course, you could also go out of the city and go on a wine tour. There's just so many fantastic possibilities.
When you talk about a four-hour or a morning tour, it's kind of the basic tour, and you cobble together, what, five or six or seven different hole-in-the-wall, artisan, little, fun, foodie corners, and you kind of have an ensemble of experiences. How does that work?
Yes. The reason I do my tours in the morning is because a large part of the tastings are in the market and in bakeries, places that are at their best before 2 or 3 p.m., I want you to try the pastries when they're warm out of the oven. I want you to try the schiacciata when it's still fresh. And also before the locals grab all of it, because it runs out pretty quickly. Everything's very time sensitive when it comes to food. So it's not a series of tastings in restaurants, but rather a series of tastings in different small historic shops, mostly owned by family, generation after generation.
I like that. Small and historic and family run, in probably in many cases, enthusiasts doing things their parents did, and they found their niche.
Yes.
and they just do what they love. And that is, a bakery or a pastry shop or olive oil or whatever they're really into. When it comes to a food tour, it's generally, 4 hours and cost about $100, or what would you say?
Yes. Yeah, I would say give or take 30 minutes and give or take $15, depending on the tour, mm-hmm. the age of the participant. My tour does run about 4 hours, and it is about $100.
And you should come with an appetite, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. And there's nothing more sad.
Imagine showing up at 10 o'clock or whatever, and you go, well, I'm full. I just had a big breakfast. And I always think of it, if I'm budgeting $100 for a food tour, I think, well, $30 of this is just lunch, So you
oh, yeah.
pick that up. And then you get to know a local guide. You get to know some other travelers. You get to meet some artisans. And to me, it's a real education in many dimensions. Let's just walk through it. Take me on a four-hour walk through Florence and stoke my appetite by describing the stops.
I would love to, Rick. My favorite route, I would say, is the San Lorenzo route, because that's kind of my stomping ground. And so all the places I go on the food tour are special to me. I know the owners. So it's not just the food and the places that are special, but it's also the people that make these things. So we spend about the first half of the tour in the San Lorenzo neighborhood, visiting two bakeries, visiting the central market, and having a few tastings within inside the market. We also visit a wine shop that I adore. And then we head over towards the Duomo area and have a more formal wine tasting where we're seated and guests have three glasses of wine. We also talk about balsamic vinegars, which are not Florentine. However, they're a huge passion for me. Also olive oil. I should not forget olive oil. And after that, everyone's pretty much stuffed, but there's always room for gelato. So we'll have a gelato.
That sounds so much fun. And I can see it takes, it's going to take a good 4 hours and you're going to leave probably full.
Yes.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Toni Mazzaglia. She's our guest now, and she's an American who first landed in Italy about 25 years ago to discover her roots. And as a student, she lived in the San Lorenzo neighborhood. That's the area around the marketplace we're just talking about. She was studying Italian gastronomy and culture, and now she leads Taste Florence food tours, where everybody gets to kind of graze their way across the Renaissance city's bakeries, rotisseries, and food vendors. There's more about Toni and her work online at tasteflorence.com. Toni, take me to the bakery. Who are we going to meet at the bakery? Because it must be fun to recognize the people and the passion behind all of the baked goods.
I absolutely love the bakery. The very first bakery is a savory bakery. They make biscotti and other sweets, but their specialty are breads and schiacciata, which is Tuscan flatbread. So we go there and we meet the owners, who are not a mother and father, like not a mom and pop, but a brother and sister. And they wouldn't be happy about me telling you, but they're both in their 90s. You would never guess. Yeah. And what I love is their personalities are so different. The brother is very shy. I'd say he's the baker, but also the delivery boy. Because even though he's at his age, he walks around like a teenager in a little white t-shirt, kind of like James Dean, and delivers the bread all over the neighborhood. His bread is used in the sandwiches in the market, those beautiful beef sandwiches. It's used across the street in the Casa del Vino, that fantastic wine shop. Their bread is the heart and soul of that whole neighborhood. And it's, for me, it's kind of what connects all the shops in the beginning part of my tour as well.
I never thought about that, but the bakery would be a very critical connector for all of these places that love to serve, you know, small plates. I know the wine shop you're talking about, Casa del Vino with Gianni.
He loves you.
Gianni's just great. And I just, for me, a wine shop is nice because you can get a glass of really good wine where maybe you wouldn't want to buy a whole bottle of it because it'd be expensive, but you can afford a glass of a top-end wine. And Gianni knows how to pair it with something really local and really tasty.
He absolutely does. And you've probably noticed he will not let you get away with doing anything that doesn't make sense traditionally or culturally.
Yeah.
So if you try to make a sandwich with too many ingredients, he will veto that.
Yeah, he's a good man to know. And I would imagine in your work, you need to have a whole arsenal of these kind of people who are passionate about their little angle on things.
Exactly.
I noticed you go to the Mercato Centrale.
Yes.
And that's... all over Europe, you've got these industrial age marketplaces that are struggling to survive these days without morphing into more of a food court as well as a market. I think the Mercato Centrale does a very creative job because upstairs you've got this crazy food court, and downstairs you've still got quite a traditional market with all of the fruits and vegetables and special little local edibles that you would enjoy seeing, just like there was no tourism.
Yes, it's really a relief, I have to say, after the pandemic and also after the food court opened upstairs, because they're actually two separate entities, two different businesses. The food court upstairs, we all thought at first might take away from the right. historic shops downstairs, but they're actually bringing in more business because they're better at marketing.
Yeah.
And to get upstairs, you have to pass through the downstairs. So it's working out for everyone.
And there are some, you know, my favorite places to eat in the market are not upstairs at the food court, which has its place, but it's downstairs. And there are some venerable little spots that are just all over Europe. When I think of a market, I remember markets accommodate the needs of local shoppers, people who are looking for a deal, people who know quality, people who are in a hurry. And they have these wonderful little hole-in-the-wall places that are just classics. There's one in the market on the ground floor, Nerbone, I think.
Yes, I love Nerbone. I'm glad you brought that up.
And it's just, you pile in there with all the lineup of people and you just point and you get a plate full and you got little more than a stool and a little tiny table to crowd into. But boy, you are just surrounded by classic Florentine energy and ambiance.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite places to have some of my favorite dishes. The bolito di manzo, the boiled beef sandwich that I love, is at Nerbone. You can have it in other places, but I think theirs is the best. And when they serve it in the winter, their ribolita, to me, is one of the best in town.
Tony, I mentioned the food stalls or the street vendors, and street food's a fun thing in many, many cultures. And in Florence, it seems to have a real strong connection with the past. There are these, well, describe it. I mean, you've got these places that have been parked on that square for probably for at least generations. What are they selling, and what's the heritage?
Actually, Nerbone used to be one of those food carts. And it was there before the Mercato Centrale was constructed. So they are actually 2 years older than the building. They're the oldest restaurant in the market, but they're actually older than the market. Hmm. So they moved inside, which was a good move for weather and things like that. But you'll still see a lot of, they're not food trucks. They're more like a food cart. And those go back well over 100 years. And they serve mostly boiled meats. The number one Florentine food or street food to be mentioned is lampredotto. Lampredotto is a type of tripe, but it's actually the lowest of the four stomachs. And it looks a lot like a type of fish that looked like an eel called lampreda. And lampreda was what the nobles would eat. And so everybody else couldn't afford to eat the lampreda. So they found this food that looked similar and they named it lampredotto.
So when I hear the word, when I go through markets in Italy, a lot of times if it's a very characteristic market, I hear bolito, 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 and that's what they're selling, isn't it?
Yes, and bolito just means boiled.
Boiled. I mean, it's a local delicacy. It goes back to the day when that was a cheap, affordable meal for the working class, right?
And now everyone eats it. It's the great unifier. You'll see people, men in business suits. You'll see the guy that's down the street reconstructing the house. You'll see pretty much everyone eating lampredotto.
And if that's a little bit exotic for you, if you're not in the mood for a little stomach of cow, stewed organs boiled to perfection, porchetta is a very easy alternative. Tell us about the porchetta and how we might enjoy that on the streets of Florence.
Porchetta is basically a half of a pig or a side of a pig that's deboned, and then they're going to fill it back up with its own liver and then beautiful herbs and spices. Fennel seeds, rosemary, sage, salt, pepper, and then it's going to be rolled up and tied with the twine, and it's going to be slowly roasted for hours, and that way it gets nice and crackly.
What is the, you know, when you go to the, in the small towns, they have these festivals for the, whatever food is being harvested, sarda or something like that?
Oh, the sagra. I'm glad you brought up the sagra. That's one of my favorite things. Oh, yes.
I am a sagra
girl.
And I can still... in fact, it was an artichoke sagra, but I can still remember the porchetta. And and it was getting sliced, and you could look in it in this wonderful cross-section of meat and greens and herbs and spices, and so good. So we can have that while we're in Florence.
Absolutely. Nerbone has that, and it's something you'll find all over Florence in restaurants, in delis, and in different food carts.
Tony Mazzaglia offers food and wine tasting walking tours in the historic center of Florence. She's our guide to the city's cuisine scene right now on Travel with Rick Steves. She includes recommendations to her favorite sites and food venues in the city on her website, tasteflorence.com. Tony also posts photos of Florence on Instagram. We discuss the popularity of the Eataly chain of upscale Italian markets, even in Italy, for hungry tourists before the restaurants open for dinner. It's in a short extra to today's interview. You'll find that at ricksteves.com/radio. Now, something kind of unique to me to this part of Italy is bread that's famous for not having any salt, right?
Yes.
What's the deal there?
So there's a few different versions of the story, but the most accepted version of the story is that our bread is unsalted because going back to medieval times, Pisa had power over all the ports of the Mediterranean, and all of the salt that Florence needed was coming in from Pisa. Of course, there's this longtime hatred between the Pisans and the Florentines, and the salt was so highly taxed that they decided, you know what, we need the salt for our cured meats and things like that. Where can we get rid of the salt? The bread. So you know what? We can keep your salt. And then they eventually acquired a taste for unsalted bread. If you've lived in Italy, for example, like me for 21 years, and you've dated a plethora of Tuscan men, what happens is you go on a vacation with them and they often don't like the bread because it has salt in it, and they feel like it is too strong with the foods they're eating. They really love their bread.
So you get a little special angle on the local cuisine with the guys you're going out with.
Of course.
We're just about out of time, Tony, but it's so great talking with you. And there's a couple of things I just want a local expert to bounce some ideas off of. Because as a travel teacher, you know, if you recommend something or if people are all going to something, you kind of want to make sure it's worthwhile. There's this phenomenon in Florence right now, which is this sandwich kind of ghetto between the Uffizi and Santa Croce.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to explain that. Is it what it's cracked up to be, or is it kind of a touristic cop-out?
Fantastic question. So the Antico Vinaio, once upon a time, was a tiny little hole in the wall, and they made beautiful crostini and sandwiches. And then I don't know if someone famous got a hold of them or if they figured out how TripAdvisor works or how the ratings and reviews work, but all of a sudden they had thousands of reviews, and all of a sudden everybody was standing in line for their sandwiches. I do have to say their sandwiches are delightful and delicious. It just depends on if you're in Florence for a week or two and you have time to stand in line for 2 hours for a sandwich, go for it. If you don't have more than half a day, please don't spend your whole half a day, even though I respect that because I'm all about food.
Right.
But at that point, I would rather you go to like one of the nice little wine shops like the Casa del Vino or Nuvoli and actually sit down and eat something or soak in some culture.
I think they figured out the TripAdvisor thing and they got into this herd mentality somehow. And right now, you don't even need the address. You'll find the density of people munching these sandwiches gets thicker as you get closer to the street. And now it's hard to find the original shop because everybody on that street is selling the same thing.
Exactly.
What I don't like is just everybody in their gym shorts is sitting around munching on these sandwiches, and it's just a different kind of scene that I think is kind of embarrassing for Florence. But
I agree.
It's part of the scene, and it was good. And as you said, there's better things to wait in line for. Hey, Tony Mazzaglia, thank you so much for joining us. And I would like to finish with one little image from Florence from my local expert here. What's a favorite place in Florence for you for a glass of wine? And what would you eat with it? What would you pair with that?
Okay, well, I have mentioned the Casa del Vino so many times. I don't want it to seem like that's the only one I love. I will also mention Le Volpi e l'Uva, which is on the other side of the river.
Oh, yeah, you and I went there in the Oltrarno. It's just about 100 yards from the end of the Ponte Vecchio.
Yes, it's really close to the Ponte Vecchio, kind of tucked away. You do have to look for it. And they have absolutely fantastic wines by the glass, a huge selection, and beautiful crostoni. So the big crostino,
the little open-faced sandwiches, the little toast sandwiches, and a wonderful wait staff, people that are really young and fun and into it. It's just a fun scene. And what's the name again so we can understand it?
Le Volpi e l'Uva.
Le Volpi e l'Uva. What does that mean?
Le Volpi e l'Uva. I know it's not easy. It's the foxes and the grapes. And it actually comes from a child's fable.
Well, you're a good example of how there is endless discoveries to be made right there in Florence,
so
whether you're into art or whether you're into food or just enjoying Italian culture. Tony Mazzaglia.
Rick.
Enjoy Taste Florence. Thanks for giving so many people a beautiful taste of Florence and best wishes.
Thank you for inviting me.
Ciao. Grazie.
There's artistic treasure none can measure here in Florence. Great is every statue looking at you here in Florence. And we've got a lot of terracotta here in Florence.
Praises in Florence, we shower on Florence. Oh, Florence, you'll always remember.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Casmore Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Find out when other radio stations air Travel with Rick Steves. You can find a list of our affiliates at ricksteves.com/radio.